Chapter 56. Murdered? Said Mr. Glegg. What's the woman talking of? Here's your nephew Tom come about a bit o' business. Murdered? Yes, it isn't many sizes ago since a packman murdered a young woman in a lone place, and stole her thimble, and threw her body into a ditch. Nay, said Mr. Glegg, soothingly, you're thinking o' the man why no legs, as drove a dog cart. Well, it's the same thing, Mr. Glegg, only you're fond o' contradicting what I say, and if my nephew's come about business, it'd be more fitting if you'd bring him into the house, and let his aunt know about it, instead o' whispering in corners, in that plotting, undermining way. Well, said Mr. Glegg, we'll come in now. You needn't stay here, said the lady to Bob, in a loud voice, adapted to the moral, not the physical, distance between them. We don't want anything. I don't deal why Pac-Man. Mind you shut the gate after you. Stop a bit. Not so fast, said Mr. Glegg. I haven't done with this young man yet. Come in, Tom, come in, he added, stepping in at the French window. Mr. Glegg, said Mrs. G, in a fatal tone, if you're going to let that man and his dog in on my carpet, before my very face, be so good as to let me know. A wife's got a right to ask that, I hope. Don't you be uneasy, Mum, said Bob, touching his cap. He saw at once that Mrs. Glegg was a bit of game worth running down, and longed to be at the sport. We'll stay out you po' the gravel here, Mumps and me will. Mumps knows his company, he does. I might hish at him by th hour together, before he'd fly at a real gentlewoman like you. It's wonderful how he knows which is the good-looking ladies, and's particular fond of them when they've good shapes. Lors, added Bob, laying down his pack on the gravel, it's a thousand pities such a lady as you shouldn't deal with a packman, instead o' going into these newfangled shops, where there's half a dozen fine gents why their chins propped up why a stiff stock, a looking like bottles why ornamental stoppers, and all got to get their dinner out of a bit o' calico. It stands to reason you must pay three times the price you pay a packman, as is the natural way o' getting goods, and pays no rent, and isn't forced to throttle himself till the lies are squeezed out on him, whether he will or no. But lors, Mum, you know what it is better nor I do, you can see through them shopmen, I'll be bound. Yes, I reckon I can, and through the packman too, observed Mrs. Glegg, intending to imply that Bob's flattery had produced no effect on her, while her husband, standing behind her with his hands in his pockets and legs apart, winked and smiled with conjugal delight at the probability of his wife's being circumvented. Eh, to be sure, Mum, said Bob. W.Y., you must ha dealt why no end o' packman, when you wore a young lass before the master here had the luck to set eyes on you. I know where you lived, I do, seen th house many a time, close upon Squire Darley's, a stone house why steps, that it had, said Mrs. Glegg, pouring out the tea. Why you know something o' my family, then? Are you akin to that packman with a squint in his eye, as used to bring th Irish linen? Look you there now, said Bob, evasively. Didn't I know as you'd remember the best bargains you've made in your life was made by packman? Why, you see even a squint and packman's better, nor a shopman as can see straight. Lors, if I'd had the luck to call at the stone house why my pack, as lies here, stooping and thumping the bundle emphatically with his fist, and th handsome young lasses all standing out on the stone steps, it'd hob in some at like opening a pack, that would. It's on the poor houses now as a packman calls on, if it isn't for the sake o' the servant maids. They're paltry times, these are. Why, Mum, look at the printed cottons now, and what they was when you wore 'em. Why, you wouldn't put such a thing on now, I can see. It must be first-rate quality, the manufacturer as you'd buy, some that as ud wear as well as your own features. Yes, better quality nor any you're like to carry. You've got nothing first-rate but brazenness, I'll be bound, said Mrs. Glegg, with a triumphant sense of her insurmountable sagacity. Mr. Glegg, are you going ever to sit down to your tea? Tom, there's a cup for you. You speak true there, Mum, said Bob. My pack isn't for ladies like you. The time's gone by for that. Bargains picked up dirt cheap. A bit o' damage here and there, as can be cut out, or else never seen either wearin', but not fit to offer to rich folks as can pay for the look o' things as nobody sees. I'm not the man as 'ud offer to open my pack to you, Mum. No, no, I'm a imprint chap, as you say, these times makes folks imprint, but I'm not up to the mark o' that. Why, what goods do you carry in your pack? Said Mrs. Glegg. Fine colored things, I suppose, shawls and that? All sorts, Mum, all sorts, said Bob, thumping his bundle, but let us say no more about that, if you please. I'm here you owe Mr. Tom's business, and I'm not the man to take up the time why my own. And pray, what is this business as is to be kept from me? Said Mrs. Glegg, who, solicited by a double curiosity, was obliged to let the one half wait. A little plan o' nephew Tom's here, said good-natured Mr. Glegg, and not altogether a bad un, I think. A little plan for making money, that's the right sort o' plan for young folks as have got their fortin to make, eh, Jane? But I hope it isn't a plan where he expects everything to be done for him by his friends. That's what the young folks think of mostly nowadays. And pray, what has this packman got to do? Why, what goes on in our family? Can't you speak for yourself, Tom, and let your aunt know things, as a nephew should? This is Bob Jackin, aunt, said Tom, bridling the irritation that Aunt Glegg's voice always produced. I've known him ever since we were little boys. He's a very good fellow, and always ready to do me a kindness. And he has had some experience in sending goods out, a small part of a cargo as a private speculation, and he thinks, if I could begin to do a little in the same way, I might make some money. A large interest is got in that way. Large interest? Said Aunt Glegg, with eagerness. And what do you call large interest? 10 or 12%, Bob says, after expenses are paid. Then why wasn't I let to know oh such things before, Mr. Glegg? Said Mrs. Glegg, turning to her husband, with a deep grating tone of reproach. Haven't you always told me as there was no getting more nor 5%? Pooh, pooh, nonsense, my good woman, said Mr. Glegg. Why you couldn't go into trade, could you? You can't get more than 5% with security. But I can turn a bit o' money for you, and welcome, Mum, said Bob, if you'd like to risk it, not as there's any risk to speak on. But if you'd a mind to lend a bit o' money to Mr. Tom, he'd pay you 6 or 7%, and get a trifle for himself as well. And a good natured lady like you would like the feel o' the money better if your nephew took part on it. What do you say, Mrs. G, said Mr. Glegg? I've a notion, when I've made a bit more inquiry, as I shall perhaps start Tom here with a bit of a nest egg, he'll pay me interest, you know, and if you've got some little sums lying idle twisted up in a stocking toe, or that, Mr. Glegg, it's beyond everything. You'll go and give information to the tramps next, as they may come and rob me. Well, well, as I was saying, if you like to join me, why £20, you can, I'll make it 50. That'll be a pretty good nest egg, eh, Tom? You're not counting on me, Mr. Glegg, I hope, said his wife. Why, you could do fine things, why my money, I don't doubt. Very well, said Mr. Glegg, rather snappishly, then we'll do without you. I shall go with you to see this salt, he added, turning to Bob. And now, I suppose, you'll go all the other way, Mr. Glegg, said Mrs. G, and want to shut me out o' my own nephew's business. I never said I wouldn't put money into it, I don't say as it shall be £20, though you're so ready to say it for me, but he'll see someday as his aunt's in the right not to risk the money she saved for him till it's proved as it won't be lost. A, that's a pleasant sort of risk, that is, said Mr. Glegg, indiscreetly winking at Tom, who couldn't avoid smiling. But Bob stemmed the injured lady's outburst. A, Mum, he said admiringly, you know what's what you do. And it's nothing but fair. You see how the first bit of a job answers, and then you'll come down handsome. Lors, it's a fine thing to have good kin. I got my bit of a nest egg, as the master calls it, all by my own sharpness. 10 sovereigns it was, why dousing the fire at Tory's mill, and it's growed and growed by a bit and a bit, till in got a matter o' £30 to lay out, besides making my mother comfortable. I should get more, on I'm such a soft why the women, I can't help letting them have such good bargains. There's this bundle now, thumping it lustily, any other chap would make a pretty penny out on it. But me, Lors, I shall sell them for pretty near what I paid for them. Have you got a bit of good net now? Said Mrs. Glegg, in a patronizing tone, moving from the tea table and folding her napkin. Eh, Mum, not what you'd think it worth your while to look at. I'd scorn to show it you. It 'ud be an insult to you. But let me see, said Mrs. Glegg, still patronizing. Aye, if they're damaged goods, they're like enough to be a bit the better quality. No, Mum, I know my place, said Bob, lifting up his pack and shouldering it. I'm not going to expose the lowness o' my trade to a lady like you. Packs has come down nigh the world, it 'ud cut you to th heart to see the difference. I'm at your service, sir, when you've a mind, to go and see salt. All in good time, said Mr. Glegg, really unwilling to cut short the dialogue. Are you wanted at the wharf, Tom? No, sir, I left stow in my place. Come, put down your pack, and let me see, said Mrs. Glegg, drawing a chair to the window and seating herself with much dignity. Don't you ask it, Mum, said Bob, entreatingly. Make no more words, said Mrs. Glegg, severely, but do as I tell you. Eh, Mum, I'm loth, that I am, said Bob, slowly depositing his pack on the step, and beginning to untie it with unwilling fingers. Be but what the order shall be done, much fumbling in pauses between the sentences, it's not as you'll buy a single thing on me, I'd be sorry for you to do it, for think o' them poor women up by the villages there, as never stir 100 yards from home, it 'ud be a pity for anybody to buy up their bargains. Lors, it's as good as a junketing to 'em, when they see me why my pack, and I shall never pick up such bargains for 'em again. Leastways, I've no time now, for I'm off to Laceham. See here now, Bob went on, becoming rapid again, and holding up a scarlet woolen kerchief with an embroidered wreath in the corner. Here's a thing to make a lass's mouth water, and on 2 shillin', and why? Why, cause there's a bit of a moth hole apostrophe I this plain end. Lors, I think the moths and the mildew was sent by Providence o' purpose, to cheapen the goods a bit for the good-looking women as han't got much money. If it hadn't been for the moths, now, every handkercher on the mud ha' gone to the rich, handsome ladies, like you, Mum, at 5 shillin' apiece, not a farthing less. But what does the moth do? Why, it nibbles off 3 shillin' o' the price I know time, and then a packman like me can carry tea to the poor lasses as live under the dark thatch, to make a bit of a blaze for 'em. Lors, it's as good as a fire, to look at such a handkercher. Bob held it at a distance for admiration, but Mrs. Glegg said sharply, yes, but nobody wants a fire this time o' year. Put these colored things by, let me look at your nets, if you've got 'em. Eh, Mum, I told you how it 'ud be, said Bob, flinging aside the colored things with an air of desperation. I know that 'ud turn again you to look at such paltry articles as I carry. Here's a piece o' figured muslin now, what's the use o' you looking at it? You might as well look at poor folks' victual, Mum, it 'ud on take away your appetite. There's a yard I the middle on as the pattern's all missed, Lors, why, it's a muslin as the Princess Victory might ha' wore. But, added Bob, flinging it behind him onto the turf, as if to save Mrs. Glegg's eyes. It'll be bought up by the huckster's wife at Phipps End. That's where it'll go, 10 shillin' for the whole lot, 10 yards. Countin' the damage done, 5 and 20 shillin' a top in the price, not a penny less. But I'll say no more, Mum. It's nothing to you, a piece o' muslin like that. You can afford to pay 3 times the money for a thing as isn't half so good. It's nets you talked on. Well, I've got a piece as'll serve you to make fun on. Bring me that muslin, said Mrs. Glegg. Aye, it's a buff. I'm partial to buff. Eh, but a damaged thing, said Bob, in a tone of deprecating disgust. Why, you'd do nothing with it, Mum. You'd give it to the cook, I know you would, and it 'ud be a pity, she'd look too much like a lady in it. It's unbecoming for servants. Fetch it, and let me see you measure it, said Mrs. Glegg, authoritatively. Bob obeyed with ostentatious reluctance. See what there is over measure, he said, holding forth the extra half yard, while Mrs. Glegg was busy examining the damaged yard, and throwing her head back to see how far the fault would be lost on the distant view. I'll give you 6 shilling for it, she said, throwing it down with the air of a person who mentions an ultimatum. Didn't I tell you now, Mum, as it 'ud hurt your feelings, to look at my pack? That damaged bit's turned your stomach now. I see it has, said Bob, wrapping the muslin up with the utmost quickness, and apparently about to fasten up his pack. Why, you're used to seeing a different sort o' article carried by packmen when you lived at the stone house. Packs has come down nigh the world. I told you that. My goods are for common folks. Mrs. Pepper'll give me 10 shillin' for that muslin, and be sorry as I didn't ask her more. Such articles answer I the wearin', they keep their color till the threads melt away I the wash tub, and that won't be while I'm a young un. Well, 7 shilling, said Mrs. Glegg. Put it out o' your mind, Mum, now do, said Bob. Here's a bit o' net, then, for you to look at before I tie up my pack, just for you to see what my trade's come to, spotted and sprigged. You see, beautiful but yellow, it's been lying by, and got the wrong color. I could never have bought such net, if it hadn't been yellow. Lors, it's took me a deal o' study to know the value o' such articles. When I begun to carry a pack, I was as ignorant as a pig. Net or calico was all the same to me. I thought them things the most valley as was the thickest. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.